This is We Teach Languages, a podcast about language teaching from the diverse perspectives of real teachers. I'm Stacy Johnson, and today on episode 60, we are diving into the second part of my interview with Richard Kiley and Eric Hartman about their book, Community-Based Global Learning, The Theory and Practice of Ethical Engagement at Home and Abroad. In this part of my interview, Richard and Eric answer questions from listeners and guide us in a reflection on how to think about, plan, and enact service within communities. And I should also mention that back in May, we asked listeners to send in questions about community-engaged learning and global learning and service learning for Richard and Eric. One of those listeners won a free copy of their book from their publisher, Stylus Publishing. If you want to know more about that giveaway and the winner, there is information on our website, weteachlang.com, or you can check out issue 19 of the Midweek News and Updates, our weekly newsletter. If you like what you hear in this episode and have not yet heard the first part of this interview, I think you'll like that too. You can go to the show notes and you'll find a link to episode 59 so you can catch up with what we talked about last week, along with links to lots of other resources that are mentioned in both episodes. All right. I would like to be able to respond to some of the listener questions that were sent in. One that I was hoping that we could start with is from Sophia Chen, and she is a high school teacher who has an ongoing relationship with a sister school. Next summer, she's planning on taking a group of students to visit the sister school and do community service. Because we don't have a lot of details about going to be involved, I know there's not a lot that you can say, but I was hoping that you could just give us some broad things to think about. If you're a year out from planning international community service, what are some of the things that you would recommend this teacher keep in mind?
In the school that is the partner school in Taiwan, is there a conception of service? What does it look like? Is there, like there is in the United States, frequently a service requirement or expectation? If not, what sort of cultural forms are taking that space? How do communities care for one another? And at the back of all these questions is, why is it that we're thinking about service at the outset as a way through which we might mediate a good relationship? We have a kind of activity in the book. The book is just rife with activities. It's full of activity sharing. One activity that this brings to mind is, what is global service? And students have this option to rank. And so we have some things they rank in the book, different examples. And the structure of the activity can have anything serve as an example. Here I would say is, deliberate intercultural contact a form of service in global context, right? So the whole program structure itself sits within a history of education abroad as a place where people make piece by pieces. That itself, having the students dialogue, I'm like, how's that service? And why are we calling moving outside of the school and doing something physical service? All these things can be used to keep the students thinking actively. And at the end of the day, part of what I'm saying here is frequently we find that what pops into dominant culture kind of worldview minds about service, that image of people with shovels or hammers or something like that, many of those things, they can be good in their own right and in their own ways for their own purposes, but many times the more important work of really seeing depth of people across what had been perceived difference, and also in this case there's not that socioeconomic difference, but in many contexts there is, and how is that a product of structural determinants in history? Those are the more important things to get moving. The notion of the stereotypical mode of service is often kind of a foil into those ultimately more important longer-term questions.
Awesome.
Yeah, one other thing to add to that is, so that's the sort of service partnership level and how that's navigated. And so that preparatory work is so important. Good transformative learning surfaces students' assumptions, gets them used to surfacing their assumptions and evaluating them in critical ways. The other aspect of that, the linguistic aspect, so, you know, the part of getting outside the classroom and engaging in community service or community engagement, what's the value add to the learning outcomes that an instructor has created? So in that interaction, that relationship with a variety of different community partners, students should be developing those listening skills, right? What are you hearing? Were there terms that came up that you don't understand the meeting? It seemed out of context or it is in context. All of those are really useful for engaging in reflection. So what were two or three words that you heard today that you weren't really sure what they meant, or they meant something that was negative or was positive? How did you respond to that? How did they respond? Those are all opportunities in particular for language instructors to use as reflective opportunities for tying them to listening. And we, even with English speakers that we work with that aren't in language context, cross-cultural linguistic context, we'll talk about the value of listening. And so that we'll use the what, so what, now what model, which is also a fantastic reflective model incorporated into our examples in the books. And the what, you know, like, what did you hear? And if they can't convey the voices of the folks that they're engaging with, again, they're not looking at a textbook, they're talking with people, and the different meanings that people attach to certain experiences or the service they're doing, you know, that's like a perfect opportunity for using community engagement as a way to enhance language outcomes. So it's getting outside the classroom and talking with people, listening to people, and then reflecting on what they're hearing together is really rich.
I really like that. I think really listening to people is hard in any language. And we have a real opportunity as language teachers to teach our students that listening skills aren't just about hearing the words and making meaning from them, but understanding intention and understanding other people's perspectives and negotiating and seeing people for who they really are. I love that. So I also, Eric, I find it so interesting the way you conceptualize service as just having an intercultural exchange is actually sort of situated in the tradition of service learning just by its very nature, that you don't have to go out of your way to create artificial experiences for students that might be outside of the school. So that leads me to another question from a listener, and it was actually a sort of a question and a flip side. One was, how do we make sure that the service that we're engaging students in is not only beneficial for the site, but students aren't really getting anything out of it? And on the flip side, how do we make sure that the service students are doing isn't just helping the students and not actually providing anything meaningful to the site? Seems like that sweet spot of finding some mutually beneficial way for students to be engaged is a challenge.
Yeah, that's what the whole book is about. I think a great deal of the work of critical thinking relating to this is about continuously evaluating our assumptions. And often for students first entering this space, that really involves taking a moment to understand how it is in this world that all of the hegemonic structures that exist presume that students in U.S. universities are solutions to global problems that have been intractable for centuries. It's a bit immodest, you might say. And so sometimes, if we're interested in being part of communities that are trying to make progress on issues that didn't just arrive yesterday, I actually often have students reflect on flipping the don't just sit there, do something phrase and say, don't just do something, sit there, and sort of where that...
That actually is convicting for me personally, because I suffer from being a doer instead of a beer.
Well, we just wrote a book. I mean, we're guilty. Yeah. We're guilty in this space too. But so we have a number of strategies to engage community-driven design in the book. And community-driven design, which is a continuous process that isn't done after a single meeting, but lives throughout a relationship, is centrally important in determining whether a student's presence in community is something that serves the community in the ways that it wishes. And that presence can be as a learner. We've encountered community organizations that are really interested in denaturalizing Western stories about how their community exists and why, and getting students to understand that and take those stories back to their home communities. Or as a builder and a doer, it really should be community-driven and determined. And then in the spaces we inhabit in education, you know, sometimes it's our role to push a little bit and make uncomfortable students' conceptions of how they're useful. You know, as educators, we're always balancing challenge and support. I think it's quite often the case that a reframing of students getting things out is important. Sometimes they're getting things out as learners who might discover how to listen across cultures, which is really hard work to actually make progress on. And as long as we're being honest and upfront with students from the outset about what they might actually, air quotes here, get out of an experience, I think we can often be pushing on that.
If I can just restate real quick, What I heard you say is that our expectations are unrealistic about what we can give, and our framing of what students will get is also unrealistic. That we're just proposing service learning is meeting everyone's needs all the time, but actually we need to manage those expectations and be more honest.
So absolutely, often we need to reimagine what's possible and do that in a way that is much more limited. And we wouldn't be in this work if we hadn't seen some absolutely extraordinary and literally transformative outcomes for students and communities. It can go fantastically well, but that fantastically well frequently is much more community driven and doesn't tend to line up with sort of dominant cultural assumptions about what service is when one leads one's own community.
That's great.
And I was just going to speak to that exactly. The other R beyond reflection is reciprocity, mutual interest. So again, for anyone in a language setting that's going in, to navigate what it is that you're going to do with that partner so that it meets the interest of the students and the partner. One quick example is we were doing health clinics in Nicaragua. We created a language dictionary that were specific to the health clinic to help people understand medical terms. It was in Mosquito, Spanish, and English. That was a living document that helped every single participant that went through that program. And it was created in relationship with community members. So that's just an example of how to be open to that, to mutually develop what it is that's going to be the service project is incredibly important all the time. You know, the book also talks a lot about program design. We took a lot of time thinking about, no matter what discipline, what are those key good practices that anyone coming from any discipline as an educator, facilitator of programs that were community-based global learning programs, what would be the things that we would want to see them think very deeply about and incorporate into their program design? So, and the only other thing I would mention is in the community-driven design, we do talk about a fair trade learning approach to this work and thinking about people's assets. Students have assets, community partners have assets, the facilitator has assets. So always thinking about who are the stakeholders involved and how are we gathering information and using assets as frequently as possible and being very sensitive to that and making sure from the get-go. And that happens before, during, and after the community engaged activity. So those are some of the things I think that would be important to make sure that people know that we've tried to cover that kind of material coming at it from what are all of those good practices that anyone from any discipline would want to incorporate into sound program design.
Great.
And so the publisher has given us a discount on the book that works until September 30th. So if you order from Stylus Press and use the CBGL20 code at checkout, you get 20% off.
That's fantastic. I'm going to use it myself. I can't wait to read this book. I'll put links to some of the organizations and papers that you've mentioned in the show notes, and I'll also put the coupon code, if you don't mind, in the show notes. Is that all right?
That's fabulous. And in those show notes, this really grew for us out of a network, which Richard's mentioned a couple times here, but the Global SL Network is really a network of community organizations and higher ed institutions dedicated to this work. So we have a website at compact.org/globalSL. So Richard and I, years ago, were like, oh, let's share what we're learning by being people who work across international ed and service learning and development, kind of policy thinking and critical reflection and adult learning.
Yeah.
That's where this website, which is started as globalsl.org, and the network around it really grew from. And so much fun to just have the opportunity to be in conversation with people who take seriously the work. One of the things about this work is it's aspirational toward a particular set of possibilities around education having some influence on socializing people toward better possibilities. It's scary often to leave campus, and we are all, those of us who do our homework, are well aware of the ways in which this work can go poorly and the ways in which it can reinforce paternalisms. One thing that really drives me to better understand how to get this right is that there's no escaping the colonial histories. There's no escaping the structures. Our institutions are generally places of elitism and privilege, particularly some types of institutions. Now, our institutions are far more porous, and actually one reason I like to use the language of community-based is community is everywhere and includes on our campuses. So actually, I don't even think you have to leave campus to do this work. The point here is just that we don't get the opportunity not intersect with these issues by staying in conventional modes of knowledge acquisition and teaching. We just end up reifying structures that worked in some way for many years but didn't really work for everyone. So we're trying to make progress on some real deep challenges, little by little.
We have this common thing that we say every time we get the opportunity, and that is, it wasn't just about the book, it was really about building this network. And I know I mentioned that, but I really want that to be a takeaway for the listener, that we want to invite anyone who's interested in community-based global learning to be part of the Global SL network. And it's not a network anyone owns, it's a network. And so it was meant to create a set of resources, the book being one, but we have summits and institutes and webinars and resources on the website, wiki. It is a place where people can find a home and supporters. You're constantly learning. We also have a blog, so people can blog on that if there's an area that they're interested in. Keep your eye out for institutes that we run. The more and more people we have involved, the more and more we keep learning.
That's great. Thank you guys so much for the work that you're doing and for sharing it openly with so many people through your website, through your network, and now through the book.
Thanks for taking the time to chat. Really appreciate it.
We would love to hear your feedback on today's episode. Get in touch with us. You can find us on Facebook or Twitter at WeTeachLang, on our website, weteachlang.com, or you can leave us a voicemail or send us a text message, 629-888-3398. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.